First speaker is Jacqueline Epping. Jackie is the lead health scientist for physical activity and health branch at the CDC. And sorry about that remark I made earlier about the CDC. Sorry, I apologize for that. She played key roles in the physical activity guidelines for Americans, the National Physical Activity Plan, and the National Board, the National Society of Physical Activity Plan Practitioners in Public Health. She serves on a steering committee for the U.S. Play Coalition, the board of directors for Kids and Canines, for Healthy Choices, and advisor to the National Coalition for Promoting Physical Activity. And she is interested in dog walking to increase physical activity.
Thanks, Bill. And also, sorry about the tight quarters. In a way, this is a good problem to have, I suppose. But so we're going to keep the doors open, and we're going to talk pretty fast. And thank you for coming and hanging in there with us. One of the things that I did not put on the little bios that I think is probably also useful to know is that I sort of manage, or I don't know what you call it, what I do, Libby, but there's a large group, an international group of researchers and practitioners who are interested in dog walking to promote physical activity and health, and I sort of coordinate the activities of that group. So if you're someone who has an interest in that area and you'd like to be included in the group, you can let me know. I don't think I have my email up here, but it's just jepping@cdc.gov, and if you shoot me an email, then I'll put you on that list as well. It's fairly informal. We have a Facebook page. We share information about research, funding opportunities, programmatic activities, and the like. So we are switching things up just a little bit today. Rather than talking with you specifically about the relationship of dog walking to meeting physical activity guidelines, I'm going to start with a little bit of rationale, overview, background on this whole area. Then we're going to move into some specific studies that the other presenters have conducted and wrap with sort of implications for programmatic activities and challenges and barriers to that. And it's interesting because when I first started talking about this about 10 years ago or so, the first reaction that I would get from people a lot of times was, are you kidding? But I'm here to tell you that I'm not kidding, and that in the past 10 years or so, there's a growing body of literature that shows a strong relationship. Now we even have a few randomized controlled trials that are showing the same thing as the longitudinal and cross-sectional studies were earlier, that is, that their dogs can, and in these studies, have shown that they do increase physical activity, and that we even see some secondary health benefits. And some of the other presenters are going to talk to you more about that, so I won't go there. I think I have to read this. I have no relationships to disclose. So I've already kind of told you this. We are going to ask if you can hold your questions and comments until all the presenters have gone. I think it'll make for a more efficient discussion. So even though the body of knowledge around dog walking specifically is relatively young, there is a robust body of evidence that it has existed for some time as to the health benefits of pets, and including dogs. And these are a few that you see: lower cholesterol, lower triglycerides, lower blood pressure, reduced stress, improved mental health, people recover more quickly and live longer after heart attacks, fewer medical appointments, minor health problems, and the maintenance of function in older adults, which is a huge consideration when you consider the fact that we are an aging society. Excuse me. As a matter of fact, there's a policy in the UK. Anybody here from the UK? Because I keep trying to find out the source of this, but it was in the popular press, that physicians can actually prescribe money up to about the equivalent of $1,200 US for people who have had several hospital stays to get a pet and to pay for vet care and pet food and so on, if that gives you some indication of the relationship of having a pet and having fewer hospitalizations. So you may say, well, why dogs? Well, for one thing, we have a lot of them, approximately 72 million in the U.S. So almost 40% of our households include one dog, and that should be 25%, I think, have two or more. This number is similar in Australia, a little lower in Japan, also similar in a number of European countries. So the equipment is there, if you will. And even if you don't have a dog of your own, there are opportunities to be able to walk them for a neighbor who isn't able or willing to walk their dogs, rescue groups, shelters, and because of their potential influence. Olivia is a black hole of need. She has Willie and me on a leash, and she walks us twice a day. We've learned to sit and roll over at her command. We attack when she feels threatened. She sleeps so soundly at the foot of our bed that she doesn't even wake up when the alarm goes off. How on earth did we ever live before Olivia? So speaking of potential influence, what I'm going to run through is a series of slides right now. And I don't know if you all have noticed this, but over the past 5 or 6 years, the number of marketing campaigns of various sorts that have used dogs. So here we have a dog, and these are just a few. I could do an hour presentation with just these clippings. Here's a dog selling floors, a credit card, vet insurance, purses, expensive purses, air conditioning systems, shoes and more purses, arthritis prescription drug, clothing, retirement plans, toilet paper, cosmetics and skincare products, outdoor furniture fabric. I cut this off, but this is like a sports drink to the side here. And now we have the new dog-friendly Honda Element package. We are even building cars to accommodate our dogs. So what I would suggest that if companies that have billions of dollars and do tons of research to learn what motivates us, our buying behaviors, have decided that dogs can do that, then I suspect that they are also able to influence other behaviors, including some of our health behaviors. So maybe by now you're saying, well, okay, I can see the dog thing, but why walking specifically? It's the most popular form of exercise cited by adults in the U.S. and Canada. It's very adaptable, so you can adjust the speed, the intensity, the duration, the volume of walking that you do. It's accessible to just about anyone. You just need a pair of comfortable shoes and a place to walk. And it's associated with long-term adherence. That's important. And one of the reasons, most people drop out of structured physical activity programs. About 50% of us drop out after about 6 months or so. But I'm going to talk to you about a study here in a minute that's shown very significant long-term adherence to walking and specifically to dog walking. It has something to do with purposefulness. So William Morgan in 2001 had an article in Quest where he talked about the need for us to have what he called purposeful physical activity. That is, physical activity that has a reason other than to gain a fitness goal or just the inherent enjoyment of the physical activity. So destination walking is purposeful. You're going to the store. Dog walking is purposeful because you're doing something for the dog, to care for the dog. And a study in Canada actually identified a construct called dog obligation that when they plugged it in the theory of planned behavior accounted for 13% of the variance in walking and another couple of percent difference in variance in the intent to walk. So it increases access and opportunities. That is, it's sort of a loose relation relationship to a Guide to Community Preventive Services recommendation for interventions in the community. And those are pretty rigorously reviewed for those of you who are familiar with them. And increasing access to opportunities for physical activity and social support are two strategies that were identified as being very successful. So a dog sitting at the front door with a lead in its mouth can create expectations. That's part of social support, as well as being a walking buddy, if you will, a companion, and for many people provides a real difference in safety and also a perceived difference in safety. And that also is important. Studies that have looked at it have found it particularly important for women and for older adults. And dog walking has the potential, I will submit, to be a catalyst for our environmental and policy changes to increase the walkability, if you will, of our communities. When you get out on the sidewalks, or lack thereof, and see how walkable or not walkable your community is, then you are more likely to take grassroots action as a citizen, not unlike we saw with walk to school programs that, remember, started out as one day, these walking school buses, and then one day events, and then longer events, and then California and a couple states passed legislation, and now we have national legislation with huge funding to every state to support these safe routes to school. And that all started with one little programmatic activity. Just a couple other examples of quotes of the influence the dogs have. She makes me get off my butt to take her for a walk when I just want to be a couch potato. Why do you have a dog? For all the reasons that everyone has: companionship, laughter, exercise. I'm 62 years old, living alone except for my smooth fox terrier, Tina. As I've gotten older, having a pet around has become an extremely important part of my life. Tina keeps me active and socialized through our daily trips to the dog park and our walks. And I suspect Dr. Johnson's going to talk to you a little bit more specifically about those health benefits in her studies. And then, of course, we have the couch potato dog syndrome also, which is kind of humorous and yet not. This is actually an American Council on Exercise ad from a number of years ago. It says, think of her as an exercise machine with hair. But we do have a pet obesity epidemic. It parallels that of humans with the same concomitant health problems. This woman's shopping for treadmills, and the salesperson comes to a dog with a lead in its mouth between a row of treadmills. And he says, it doesn't have the bells and whistles of some of the other models, but it won't turn into a coat rack either. So I'm going to go over some key findings to date, and I will let you know in advance that a few of these I'm going to just whip through, because I think we'll get the point, and I'd rather you be able to hear more about some of the incredible research that these other women have done. Most studies to date have been cross-sectional. So we do have a few longitudinal, one observational, a couple of interventions, two randomized controlled trials so far, and a few reviews. And you can see that these have all been, in the last 6 years or so. Before 1991, I think we found one study in this area, and then it's just kind of grown exponentially since about 2000. These studies looked at different measurements, frequency, duration, number of steps, so on. You can see there are a number of things they looked at, including this potential mediator of dog obligation. One of the earlier studies was done on Australia, and Adrian Bauman and his dog, Jack Russell Schroeder, found that dog owners who walked their dogs got more physical activity than non-dog owners. However, a number of the dog owners did not walk their dogs, and those people actually got less activity than the non-dog owners. So it's not enough to just have a dog, we've learned. You have to walk it. And then from the National Household Transportation Survey, my colleague Sandy Hamm and I looked at a cross-section of adults and youth and saw that about 60% of them took two or more walks a day, at least 80% of one walk of 10 minutes or more. Moving toward half accumulated to 30 minutes from walk of 10 minutes or more at a time, which sounds a lot like what? Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans? And I think an important finding from this study was that there was no significant difference according to your gender, how much money you made, or where you lived. This was another cross-sectional study that we have yet to publish, but we also found that about half of dog walkers walked 5 to 7 days a week. 30% of them walked every day. The mean total minutes a day, again, meets physical activity requirements. And at least a third of those said they walked for their exercise, but almost half of them said they walked for the dog's exercise. In Canada, this was in Greater Victoria, British Columbia, dog owners reported more mild and moderate physical activity, walking 300 minutes a week compared to 168 minutes for non-owners. And this is the study that found that construct of dog obligation. Excuse me. This was a study of older adults that Roland Thorpe et al. Out of Johns Hopkins did, and they found that, you can see these are 73 to 82, so these are older adults, and the dog owners, again, got more exercise, non-exercise walking than non-dog and non-pet owners. They took more and longer walks, and they found that the non-dog pet owners had more falls. They didn't know why, but one of the speculations was that they were actually tripping over their cats. An interesting thing of Roland's study also is that he did a 3-year follow-up, and at 3 years, the dog owners and dog walkers still maintained a lead over the other groups in walking, and they also had faster usual and faster rapid gait, which is important for mobility. So here, this is Serpell's study from 1991. He looked at new owners who had gotten dogs or pets from animal shelters. So he looked at dog owners, cat owners, and then a control group. And he found that the new dog owners significantly increased their walking in the first month, and the increase was maintained at 6 and 10 months. Bob Kushner found essentially the same thing in his PPET study. And in a series of case studies, Morgan found that dog walkers reported walking over 4 miles a day for an average of 10 years and reported that they did that primarily for the dogs. More social contact with walking. My team, we are just putting into clearance a paper that did a review comparing specifically dog owners who walk their dogs, dog owners who don't walk their dogs, and found that the dog owners who walk their dogs are almost 3 times more likely to meet physical activity recommendations than dog owners who don't. We know, again, that a sizable number of dog owners don't walk their dogs. And Cindy Lentino et al. In D.C. had another, I think, very important study that had the same findings, but they also found that walking a dog, even at the low to moderate intensity and with frequent stops, which is what a lot of people said, well, that's why dog walking won't really work, they still showed measurable health benefits.